Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, hello, and a very warm welcome into Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio, your regular source of accessible technology, information, reviews, and interviews that we hope you can use to get the most from your technology. Don't forget, of course, Tech Talk, it's your program, and we always love to hear from you. So why not drop us a line? You can send a voice note or even just a good old-fashioned email to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we are at the Inclusive Design for Sustainability Conference held at the Glasgow Science Centre. We'll be hearing from visitors to the event, the keynote speakers, and some of those exhibiting products and services. So stay tuned. That's all to come this time on Tech Talk. You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio from the Inclusive Design for Sustainability Conference 2023 from the Glasgow Science Centre. And joining us is Aidan Foreman, RNIB's Director of Technology. Aidan, fancy seeing you at a technology conference.
I know, the stranger places you could find me, I'm sure, Dave. But yeah, no, absolutely, really looking forward to being here today.
Now, you've got quite an active role in the conference because you are the host on day two. But I know you've been perusing the program. What are you looking forward to?
So there's so many great sessions over the 2 days, and in particular, obviously, the one I'm hosting, there's some brilliant keynote speeches from Christopher Patino from Google, as well as Jenny Leigh Fleury from Microsoft, and in particular, I'm really looking forward to those two. But there are a wealth of great speakers and panel sessions across the 2 days, including yourself, Dave, hosting a panel session, of course. So I thought I'd mention that one while we're
Yeah, about navigation and the environment and how we can make that sustainable. And they are the two themes, really, inclusive design and sustainability. And I guess the conference exists to sort of explore where there are common areas of interest or overlap. I mean, what does that mean for you in terms of thinking about inclusive design and sustainability? Where do they meet? Where do you think are the sort of the opportunities for both those areas to collaborate?
Yeah, I think it's really important when we're designing things that to design it once and design it well and design it for everybody. So for me, that's where the sustainability element comes in. So it's a case of if we're creating a solution, let's create a solution that works for everybody, is accessible from the outset, and you know, inherently you'd expect that would lead to some form of sustainability. And I think that's where the two link together really well. And hopefully we're going to hear a lot about that and talk a lot about that over the next couple of days.
Yeah, because often, you know, accessibility and inclusion, they're often an afterthought, aren't they? Sometimes, you know, people try to retrofit accessibility, and that just doesn't work in the physical world and in the digital world.
No, absolutely. And a lot of time you find these solutions are not baked in from the start, and they're added on as additional bolt-ons or extras after the fact. And actually what that ends up leading to is a bad experience all round for everybody. So, you know, you might find a vending machine that they might have decided to move away from like a traditional keypad. They've gone for a touch panel, for example, but actually in reality that doesn't work for anybody. So you're moving away from the technologies that maybe work for everyone. So I think, yeah, it's really important.
And how does that inform your work at RNIB when you're rolling out infrastructure, or you're thinking about, you know, the technology that colleagues at RNIB are going to be using into the future? How much do you involve blind and partially sighted people in that sort of testing at the early stages to make sure that what you're going to roll out is going to be there for as long as possible? We know technology moves so quickly, but as you say, you know, if you can get those decisions early on in terms of accessibility, then you're not going to have to rip it up and start again a couple of months down the line.
No, absolutely. So one thing we try and do at RNIB is bake in accessibility from the very start with all of the projects we work on. An example of that, I think, was our new website. So what we did there was we very early on went out to a testing group where we worked with a bunch of blind and partially sighted people out in the community to test and learn what worked and what didn't work, taking what we called the voice of the customer back into the designing phase. So the technical element didn't get carried away before the actual user's needs came into the equation. So we was able to design that from the very start to be an accessible platform. And what that's led to is a very user-centered design. And you know, just to call it out, and it's a little bit embarrassing because of course it's my own team that's designed it, but we had the charity digital company write an article about how our website was one of the most designed for our customers. So they called out the fact that they'd seen the fact that we'd made a call out to people to do the testing. We'd included blind and partially sighted people who are ultimately our customers, but also people that we're here to serve as well. And we'd use them in the design phase, and then we'd kind of after that, we then designed the website to fit around that. So yeah, absolutely, and that's where it's been really important for us. So we do that in as many projects as we can possibly do.
I'll come back to the conference in a second, but I just wanted to pick on something that we spoke about previously. Last time you were on Connect Radio, you and I talked a bit about AI and the role of AI, and I know you've got various projects and prototypes and ideas around that. Have you got anything that you can share at all in terms of AI, how that's progressing?
Yeah, so we're doing a lot of work around this, and in particular a lot of proof of concepts to see what we can spin up, test and try quickly. Basically, the idea is kind of that fail fast type mentality. So we've been trying things, spinning things up, trying it, giving it a go, and if it doesn't work, actually we've been able to then stop that and then move on to something different. We started off with a little app called ChatRNIB, which I think I mentioned when we spoke before, but we've moved on now to kind of being able to look at how we might apply that to workplace technology, and how that might impact when people are joining like virtual meetings and stuff like that, but then also for our customers. So we've been looking at proof of concepts around our website and whether we could increase the search capability there to be able to surface content faster for our customers. But then also going down a more R&D route with some more sort of behind the scenes stuff, we've been looking at the role that Braille and AI, so taking sort of more traditional formats and looking at how the AI could apply to those types of formats and be able to make a difference there. So we're working with partners across different sectors and obviously a lot of the big tech companies to be able to look at different use cases and kind of work up little projects and mini groups to sort of see if we can really start driving some influence in the outside world as well. So we're keeping that internal focus to see what we can do for our staff, but also looking at what we can do for our customers as well. So working on a number of different things in that AI space actually at the moment.
This conference isn't just about RNIB, of course. You've mentioned some of the technology partners. We've also got Scott Rail, I believe, are going to be joining us, and of course the Glasgow City Council, I think, are involved, and we're here at the Science Centre. And while the presentations are always interesting to listen to, it's the conversations in corridors often where relationships get made and those partnerships are really cemented. Are there any organisations in particular that you're looking forward to networking with this week?
Other than the obvious tech companies, I think the number of colleagues from those particular companies will be here. I'm definitely looking forward to meeting up with colleagues there again. But in particular, just networking with as many people as possible, having the conversation, seeing what we can, you know, whether there's any kind of synergies and value can be added to the conversations, and whether we can move forward any projects with those individual people. So actually, yeah, it's a bit of a mix really for me, but and also meeting up with internal colleagues as well, I think it's really important as well. So there'll be colleagues that we maybe haven't spoken to or worked with for a little while, and we'll all be at the same place. So I think, yeah, there's many different angles to a conference like this, to be honest with you.
Thanks very much, Aidan Foreman, Director of Technology at RNIB. Thanks for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio. Throughout this week's programme, you will be hearing from some of those who were keynote speakers this week at the Inclusive Design for Sustainability Conference held at the Glasgow Science Centre.
You join me here on RNIB Connect Radio at the RNIB Inclusive Design for Sustainability Conference, and I've got Christopher Patno, who's Google's Head of Accessibility and Disability for Europe and a bit further beyond as well. Christopher, could you just sort of firstly tell me why it's so important for Google to be here at this conference?
Well, one of the most important things that we can do is be part of the conversation. When you want to design inclusively, you want to be with the community you're trying to design for. And RNIB and Google have years of collaboration together. So I was proud to be able to participate. I was proud to be able to speak earlier today. And hopefully I can continue to be helpful and useful a little later throughout the day.
And as you say, there's been a long sort of relationship between Google and R&IB, and it's so good to have sort of the feed in from disabled organizations like the R&IB into what Google are doing.
It's critically important because unless you live in the world with a disability, you don't. I as a sighted person, or those of us who happen to be sighted, we can't know what the life is like of someone with vision loss, for example. So when we want to design a product that will help them, we need to understand what's broken. We need to understand what the opportunities are, and together we can come up with the ideas and the features and the solutions. And by working together and testing together, we can actually make sure they actually do what we want.
And you were talking earlier today about what sounds like a very exciting development, where I think you can sort of interrogate pictures.
Oh yeah, it's the ability to have questioned through AI of a photograph. So I showed a video and we were able to listen to a picture of a dog on a beach that was happy. It had a ball in its mouth, and all of this was told by the AI. And then you could ask questions like, what kind of dog was it? And is it happy? And these are things that most people who would create an alt text, for example, wouldn't ask. They wouldn't say it's a happy dog necessarily. But when it comes to your pictures, there's no one to build it. So it's better to have a person do it, to have your partner beat it, but sometimes you just want to do it now. And so tools like this can be very, very helpful.
And yeah, and for me, as somebody who's visually impaired, it's actually sort of when you get an image, it's actually sort of investigating that image, and sort of in a way it can help, I think, in some ways in regards to navigation, because you could take a picture of a building and you could say, well, is the door to the right or is the door to the left? Is the door a revolving door? And that sort of thing. So it could actually open up many doors.
Literally and figuratively. It wasn't designed for this, so it might be a little chunky at first, but with this feedback from you, as I talked about earlier today, it's progress, not perfection. So knowing this is how you want to use it, we might be able to make it better fit for purpose by collaborating with you, understanding the opportunity, and then we can talk about how should we describe it? What's a useful description? So we can take the ideas and together create something that's helpful.
And what do you see sort of as the future, especially of sort of AI and virtual reality and sort of for access for blind and partially sighted people?
So for me, virtual reality is exciting in particular because it gives us a chance to create a three-dimensional screen reader is the best way I have. And the screen being the world around you that you're seeing in virtual reality. This isn't something that Google's working on. This is Christopher riffing. And what's neat is if we can learn how to describe a virtual real world environment, like there's a tree ahead of you, there's a rock to the side of you, there's a bird flying, understanding what's important using AI allows us to tell you what's important. But then you can say, well, what's that behind me? And we can describe it to you. So then the fun part is you take these heuristics, these algorithms that can describe virtual reality to someone who is blind or visually impaired, take off the virtual, put on a pair of glasses with cameras, and now we can use real reality, and we can use AI and computer vision and location to describe real reality. And this is years away, but this is what starts to happen with these new technologies.
And for listeners who might want to find out a little bit more about what Google is up to and what the future might be looking like, is there an accessible sort of portal or website that people can go to find out what Google are up to?
It's google.com/accessibility. And if you want to describe to our newsletter, it's g.co/a11y-news.
Well, Christopher, thank you very much indeed for joining me here on R&IB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Hello there, I'm Matthew Clark.
And you are a service user of R&IB, correct?
Yes, I've been a service user, a supporter of R&IB for many years, probably 10 years ago, if not more. When I moved to Glasgow for university, I became a member of HAGAI, the wonderful youth forum in Scotland. When I became a bit too old for that, I stayed involved still. And the last year since leaving work, following just being very unhappy and not feeling I was being supported to progress, I've been well supported by R&IB again as I've come back into the fold that's helped me maintain a busy, healthy, happy lifestyle to get me back towards the stage where I'm going to be going back into employment soon. And that's involved being a part of our local Connect walking group. It's involved having the time to come along to this wonderful conference that's finally back at the Glasgow Science Centre many years after we stopped having tech share, but we're back for inclusive design for sustainability.
Yes, and it has been a great conference so far. We've had over a day and a half of great workshops, presentations and exhibitions. What have been your highlights particularly for you from the conference?
What stood out for me, I think, as a start, is there's a little bit more being spoken about rather than just technology. There's this focus on inclusive design more holistically. The conversation is being tried to be swayed towards how can this be done sustainably, but how can this fit into the sustainability agenda, I suppose. But also there's more general or other services and information here at the conference that is relative to RNIB and innovations in other parts of the visually impaired space. So one of the interesting things I've looked at the marketplace this morning is a demonstration of a tactile ballot paper. So I had the chance with a real voting booth to try filling in a single transferable vote for a Scottish style local election. So being able to feel the boxes that were raised, the edges of the boxes, and being able to write my numbers into them, which although I'm partially sighted, I tried to do just by touch rather than using any of my vision. Mm-hmm. And I asked one of our wonderful campaigns team members, Katrina Burness, who I've met over the years, I asked her, is this an eligible ballot paper? Can you see my preferences? And she said, yes, we can. So although my first impression, I wasn't sure if it was quite as tactile as I would have liked, it's a bit of progress, which is really exciting. And I suppose something that makes it much more realistic to be used. It is the same shape and size. Other than being a wee bit tactile, it's completely indistinguishable from an ordinary ballot paper. So requires less adjustment, I suppose, if it's going to be more of a mainstream type of paper, potentially. That's left me quite excited. Another exciting thing that I saw this morning was a new piece of technology that's an innovation developing on what SimSpecs have done for many years. Now, I know it's controversial, SimSpecs. A lot of people don't like them, but I'm a believer in what many advocates for them say, that you can win over someone to the need for inclusive and accessible design with a 30-second pitch using simulation, that you could never communicate and leave them with such a lasting impression in any PowerPoint or TED Talk, potentially. They're much more likely to remember it, especially if they're not such an active listener. But using virtual reality, this Irish company have developed a solution where you put on a headset and can have vision impairments simulated where your eyes are being tracked. So even with my sight loss, I've got about 5% of sight, I was able to see simulation in several different virtual environments. And I was really interested in the possible applications of this, because one moment I was stood trying several different sight conditions on a street with passing traffic and buses. Another moment I'm in a classroom, another moment I'm on a bus, and another I'm on the London Underground. In the IMAX theatre, I think one of the most interesting bits for me yesterday were several short presentations that all related to mobility and navigation related technology applications, and to have several of these summarised to me in succession gave me a real idea of where innovations and current apps and technologies or upcoming apps and technologies might be for us to try right now. In the case of the Welcome app, which has been going for a couple of years now, and there are several venues with that. Another guy who was talking yesterday runs Waymap, which is going to be launching in the UK later this year. And not that I even quite understand how, but supposedly Waymap needs no built infrastructure around of a person or retrofitting in a physical environment, even an indoor environment, to be able to help you with indoor navigation. Now, of course, I want to give that a go when it's launched because I've not quite got the spare cash right now to go on holiday to Washington, D.C., where apparently it's been rolled out in the tri-state area already. But those are just two of the innovations, and there have been even more spoken about. And after several years when RNIB had a lot of organisational change and we didn't have tech share happening anymore, it was very much changed to be pivoted exclusively towards professionals, really, run in London by AbilityNet. And that's all well and good, but I love the format that RNIB's conferences have taken, that it is this wonderful melding of community members, volunteers, professionals, where we can create this great conversation and everyone come away more empowered, more interested. And there's techie people like me here, but there's also several friends of mine who I don't think are such big techies, but who are here because they know it's a great environment and they want to find out the latest goings on for themselves. And I love that so many people can be here, and that after the last few difficult years that we're doing something so wonderful as this in person again. It just feels so thrilling to be here, and I look forward to all the takeaways that I will have and that so many others will have from this.
Matthew Clark, thank you very much for speaking to us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
We'll hear now from RNIB staff who were out speaking with exhibitors at the Inclusive Design for Sustainability Marketplace.
This is RNIB Connect Radio at the Inclusive Design for Sustainability Conference, and I'm joined now by the team behind WeWalk. Do you guys want to just quickly introduce yourselves?
Happy to do that. So great to be here. I'm Jean-Marc, WeWalk's Head of Research and Development. Very pleased to be joined by Sid, our Business Development Manager, and Gyokan, our CEO as well.
Yeah, and I'm a recent WeWalk user myself, actually, so it's good to be speaking to you guys. I just bought the WeWalk cane a couple of months ago. So yeah, I'm enjoying it. Yeah, it's really good.
We're glad to hear. It's always lovely to find one of our users, especially when they're enjoying our product. It's what keeps us going every day. So thanks for being one of our users.
Yeah, no worries. So how have you guys found the conference today? There's been a few highlights from you guys, which we'll get onto in a bit. But what's your experience been like? Have you enjoyed it being here with us?
Well, I'm worried I might be slightly biased when I say it's been fantastic, given that we work with the RNIB, of course, but truthfully, it really has, for the simple reason that we've been, you know, it's one of those conferences that actually brings everyone together. I mean, our everyday users, to decision makers, to people behind policy, to even developers. And that's really refreshing because, you know, very few conferences in the world get that breadth of opinion and breadth of people in one single place. So not only, obviously, meeting you, Callum, and meeting our WeWalk users, but also being able to speak to developers, bounce ideas off each other, and also to potential policymakers and decision makers to make sure that more people can get access to our product. I mean, what more can you ask for, right? And of course, it's only the RNIB that could deliver something like this. So it's been great.
Now, we've just been having a kind of panel discussion about the kind of future of navigation apps and things like that. And something that you kind of just slipped in there at the last minute is a kind of a soft launch of a new service that you guys have been working on called WeAssist. So do you want to just tell us a bit about that and, you know, what it is and what we can expect?
Of course. Well, I'm glad the just one more thing moment actually worked. It's gotten some people's attention, which is great.
It worked really well.
The idea behind WeAssist is actually quite simple, as is WeWalk. WeWalk works in most environments. I mean, it works outdoors, but we realize that it's not going to be able to read text just yet or navigate you in every indoor space just yet. And sometimes, you know, the agent, the human, is always going to be your fallback mechanism. And that's exactly behind the idea behind WeAssist, is that you can get someone dependable, someone that's professionally trained to work and guide a visually impaired user across these diverse environments through a multitude of tasks, be it navigation, reading labels, looking at a menu at a restaurant, finding an empty seat or table. And that's exactly what WeAssist is, you know. You've got your WeWalk out, you suddenly need a little bit of extra help, well then WeAssist is here for you. And that's really our unique selling point, if you'd like, in this instance. In the sense that whilst we love our volunteers and we love people that support us, we also realize that there are certain instances where you're going to want a trained agent that's going to be there, that's going to guide you for those very, very specific tasks. And that's what we offer. So each of our volunteers, each of our agents are all vetted. They're all run through a training course. And we make sure that if you do need them in a bit of a pickle, they're going to be there for you. And that soft launch is actually very interesting. So we want to make sure we get the service right. We don't want to just launch and sort of find out that it's not working as it should. So the idea behind the soft launch is will be available between 12 to 3 p.m. from the 1st of July, free of charge. So UK is currently a free zone, essentially, where people can test it out, they can try it out, they can get a feeling for the service, let us know how it could be improved, what's going well, what's not going so well. Of course, with the RNIB being a key supporter of this, and hopefully growing from there together.
So you said it's available, you know, this is a soft launch and it's, you know, available from 12 to 3 p.m. Is that every day so far?
Apart from Sundays.
Okay.
So weekdays only.
Yeah. And is this kind of do you think it's fair to describe this as a bit of a beta stage of it then, just for people to test it out, as you said, get a bit of a feel for it, give feedback on it?
I would say so, yep. It helps not just our users, we'd want, but also it helps us to understand how we can tailor our services. And this is actually a bit of a plug and a bit of a transition, because we're working on an interesting computer vision project with Imperial College and the RNIB, again, as a project partner. And we take in the way that users use their cameras and sort of the things that they want a sighted agent to do to try to build some computer vision models that might even be able to replicate that. So that's very, very exciting. It doesn't just help our users and help us deliver a better service, but it might also help our research and development to really create some pretty cool stuff in the future. So, yeah, we definitely want to make sure we get this right for our community.
Yeah. Without wanting to kind of just spring the really tough questions on you, there are similar services that, you know, there's things like Be My Eyes and Aira that kind of do this sort of thing already in terms of, you know, visual assistance and connecting to a human. So what's kind of different with WeAssist?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's kind of like comparing a toolbox. You wouldn't simply pitch the screwdriver as being the best tool for everything. You'd want sort of a plethora of different tools. And for us, we've looked carefully at these other services. We realize that, for example, Be My Eyes, it's great because you can connect with literally anyone you'd like. Whereas for us, we realized, okay, we want to fill a slightly different niche in the market, which is, you know, being able to, whilst also using WeWalk's complete multimodal navigation system, which is something very unique to WeWalk, have an agent be able to use that data to better support the user, trained agent, of course. So for instance, with our app, the agent can actually find out the user's exact location. Of course, this is all with the user's consent. They can then guide them on certain public transport or walking directions, again, using our built-in navigation system, which is unique to WeWalk. And this is all in that one seamless experience. So one of the issues I've had as a visually impaired person is jumping between 4 or 5 different apps to essentially conduct one task.
Yep.
With something like this, you've got that WeAssist service, you've got a trained agent, you've got your navigation and multimodal experience, all in a single place, all in one app. And that's really the preposition here, you know, being another tool in the toolkit for the person that prefers having that all-in-one experience.
Okay, so from the 1st of July, if people want to access WeAssist and try it out, how do they go about that?
Yeah. Simply download the WeWalk app, sign in with a WeWalk account, and once everything's enabled, you should have a WeAssist icon in the bottom of your screen. And of course, we'll happily provide our website, wewalk.io, and our info email as well. I think it's info@wewalk.io. So that if you need anything whatsoever, or if you're having problems with that, you can just reach out to us and we'll be sort of a direct line of contact. Of course, there are loads of tutorials in the app as well. well. So if you did need anything or, you know, something had come up, there are loads of resources in the app and ways to contact us to let us know how we could do better or to let us know what's going well.
Okay, so that's We Assist, available from the 1st of July in the WeWork app. So very exciting stuff, and we'll look forward to seeing how this goes.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us, guys. Cheers.
Thanks for having us.
RNIB staff was speaking with visitors to the Inclusive Design for Sustainability conference here at the Glasgow Science Centre. Let's hear from some of those now.
I'm Parastu Zali. I'm a PhD student at University of Strathclyde. And I'm here to get some knowledge, some insights about the state-of-the-art technologies about navigation. And I'm an architect, so I'm looking into design strategies for making buildings more inclusive and accessible.
Have you enjoyed anything in particular at the conference so far?
Yes, definitely.
What have been your highlights?
The first speech by Diana was really impressive for me. The fact that she touched with the with her expertise and also with her personal life perspective, and also the discussion panel on Connect Radio was really inspiring for me.
What are you looking forward to seeing still at the conference? What is there anything you're looking forward to still?
Maybe some more insights from the lived experiences of people with different visual impairments.
So what's your name?
Hi, my name's Jackie Winning.
What are you looking to get out of this conference?
Well, I'm just loving the buzz and all the really exciting ideas, meeting new people, meeting old people, but people that are here and are very inspiring in their enthusiasm.
What have been your highlights so far?
I've really enjoyed coming in and just hearing the speakers, but also the Connect Radio session was fabulous. I thought that worked so well, but the whole lot of the conference, I think, so far, so good.
What else are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to I've purposely not really looked too much at the agenda because I like to be surprised by what's coming up next, and I'm finding it, it's given me tons of ideas to take back to the organisation that I work in. I'm the chief exec at Forth Valley Sensory Centre, and already I've got ideas that I can take back there and build on.
Hi, I'm Takako. I am here to learn about how to make a web application more accessible.
What have you enjoyed at the conference so far?
To hear from a variety of panel and some industry updates and what's happening to make a collective effort to make technology accessible.
What are you looking forward to seeing at the conference still?
Probably as someone who is learning about software development, I like to know what role I could play to make technology more accessible.
So what's your name?
My name's Emma Hegarty. I work for NHS Lothian. I'm a programme director for the design and delivery of the new eye hospital.
What are you looking to get out of this conference?
I'm keen to get a bit more of a focus on accessible design, particularly technology that can be used within a new built setting. So how do we incorporate that into the design of the building, and how we make our new hospital basically as user-friendly as we can for the service group using the facility.
Have you had any particular highlights from the conference so far?
I really enjoyed the Connect Radio sort of panel. I thought there was quite a lot of interesting points coming out of that, particularly because it's people talking about what technologies they use on a daily basis, and you know, it's people who would potentially be using our service and how we can help integrate what they're using into our new facility and what's actually being used on the ground, as it were.
Is there anything in particular you're still looking forward to seeing at the conference?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. I'm looking forward to it all. I'm just here to... To be honest with you, I thought when I looked at the programme before the conference, there'll be specific speakers who will be of most interest. But actually, I found I've got a lot out of all of them, little snippets from bits that I didn't expect. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily looking forward to anything in particular. I'm just trying to get bits of information across the board.
Hello, what's your name?
I'm David Denham. I work for NHS Lothian. Specifically in the IT side of things.
So what particular things have you enjoyed at the conference so far?
Again, like Emma there, it's just a general overall, every aspect of it, and try to unpick the specific areas that will help us in the new build.
What else are you looking forward to seeing at the conference?
Again, nothing specific, it's just it's overall and trying to major understand. My mum's partially sighted, so there's an element of that in there as well, and just trying to understand actual other users' experience of various aspects of buildings.
What's your name?
My name's Fiona.
And which organisation are you working for?
So I work for RNID.
And what have you enjoyed at the conference so far?
I think my favourite things, there are two of them. One has been meeting lots of people that are interested in accessibility, and my other thing was hearing from the usability folks from RNIB. That was really insightful for me, and hearing about some things I really hadn't thought about before.
And what particular things are you looking to still get out of the conference?
I am looking forward to learning some more things that I didn't know, and also meeting lots of people. I was grateful to come with somebody who seems to know everybody at the conference, so I'm getting introduced to lots of people.
Hello, what's your name?
My name is Louise.
And which organisation are you from?
I'm from Nile.
And what have you enjoyed at the conference so far? What have been your highlights?
I really enjoyed the panel discussion. I thought it was really good to get a good perspective from different types of people mm-hmm. about their experiences with technology. Mm-hmm.
And what are you looking to get out of the conference still?
I mean, similar to Fiona, still looking to learn lots more things that I can take back to my colleagues at work, because they're really jealous they're not here.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. I'm David Williams, and I'm joined by David Williams. Yes, you did hear that correctly. David Williams is responsible for accessibility initiatives at Sony Europe and has been speaking at the Inclusive Design for Sustainability Conference here at the Science Centre in Glasgow. Welcome, David, to RNIB Connect Radio. Fantastic to meet my namesake. I've heard a lot about you, and I'm glad that you're able to join us. Let's talk about accessibility and inclusion then. Can you share some of your recent initiatives and some of the collaboration that Sony Europe has had with RNIB in recent years?
Really nice to meet you, David, and your name has come up in many, many emails. It's finally nice to put a face to a name. I've been in Sony for over 30 years. My background is television design. But since 2016, I've become more heavily involved in accessibility. As we know, Sony has the Android and Google TV platform. We have some great accessibility features on it. And gradually, my role in accessibility has grown bigger and bigger. Within Sony Europe, we have a sustainability task force where we focus on key areas, and accessibility is one of the four pillars that really takes high priority for the organisation in terms of setting KPIs and ensuring that everything's on track. Within the accessibility pillar, we have various activities such as internal promotion. We run an internal inclusive design accessibility lab where we want to explain to people the challenges faced by people with accessibility needs. We also show how Sony's great products can overcome some of these challenges. And the whole point is to open up conversations, to raise awareness, and to make sure people feel comfortable to come forward, as obviously our employees also have the right for reasonable adjustments within the workplace. So that's the conversations. Also internally, we're doing a lot of education. So we're training our senior leaders to make sure that they understand the culture that's being driven from Sony Corp in Tokyo regarding sustainability. And the message from Yoshida-san, he's basically saying that we want to deliver Kando. Kando is the ability to feel moved emotionally through a product or an experience or anything in life. And Yoshida-san's message to everybody, whether you're working in products or services, is to deliver Kando to all of society, regardless of ability. And that's our mission. Whether it's televisions, services, gaming, music, we want to deliver these experiences to everyone, regardless of ability.
Let's talk about what some of that means for our listeners then. Blind and partially sighted people listening to RNIB Connect Radio who might be considering a Sony product. What sorts of accessibility features and support might they find?
So in terms of television, we're supporting is voice control based on Google Assistant. We also have screen reader, we have magnification, you can set subtitles to different contrast, different colour levels. So we have the basic functions on television. Also in the event today, we're also promoting a camera. So it's the Sony Compact Digital Camera, which is a HX99. And it's been launched in collaboration with a company called QD Laser. And QD Laser produces a retina viewer. So for people who have low vision, a problem at the front of the eye, the camera with the QD Laser attachment can basically transmit by low power laser the image onto the back of the eye on the retina. So if you have a problem with astigmatism or other problems in the front of the eye, the laser passes through the rear, which gives improved sight for people with low vision. That's one innovation that we've demonstrated today as part of the event.
And what's been the response to that?
The response will be very interesting. This is the cameras available in US and Japan, not available yet in UK and Europe, but we're working on that. It's very interesting, and again, it's a very, very novel idea. We're also working with the RNIB. We've held meetings recently with the equipment and together with the optometrists. So we're trying to understand exactly this type of technology, what benefit can it give, and for what classifications of visual impairment. So also we're trying to understand the benefit and for which persons. That's an ongoing task we have at the moment.
To what extent can blind and partially sighted people get involved in product testing and you know, feeding back? You know, quite often accessibility features are added retrospectively and often that can end up being more expensive. They don't always work quite as well. How early in that design and development process can we as a community get engaged and get involved to make sure that you as an organisation are able to deliver accessible experiences?
So the accessibility activity within Sony, it's organised under an organisation called Accessibility Promotion Office. They have departments in Japan and also in the US and in Europe, of course. Our colleagues in Japan, we have a worldwide design for television, and our colleagues in Japan, in US, sorry, making extensive user tests with people who have low vision or hard of hearing to really understand the challenge faced. So the team in US take responsibility for leading this type of direct user testing activity, but we are talking separately with the RNIB to set up other tests using other products, which unfortunately I can't announce anything on the radio station, but we are discussing with how we can work directly with your users in certain specialist areas where we want to get greater insight and greater awareness from the community who obviously better understand the challenges being faced.
So lots going on, and I guess the message from you, David, is watch this space.
It's watch your space. Sony, it's a challenge to make sure everything's accessible for everybody all the time. It's a challenge, but the output and the solutions, they're increasing year on year, and I'm optimistic that we're heading in the right direction towards a fully inclusive society.
We're coming towards the end of the Inclusive Design for Sustainability conference. What does it mean for you coming to a conference like this? How have the last 2 days been?
Apologies, I couldn't attend yesterday. I was a little bit too busy, but I attended today, and today was really, really great.
You were on a panel, weren't you, this morning?
I was on a panel, yeah. So we were talking about the impact of green media and accessibility and various challenges. Again, it's great to have a face-to-face conference, and you can't have this deep debate via Teams or via Zoom. The topic was very complex, and it's obviously how do you deliver accessible solutions, ubiquity across the whole of society. And I think there's one challenge that we're facing, I think, is the traditional model, especially of television broadcast. We probably need to add extra maybe metadata or contents to try to add a rich experience. There was a number of panelists are focusing purely on AI, and AI obviously, if the question is regarding green credentials, AI obviously is power consuming. You need to find solutions which are low power. Maybe you can't transfer all data. So I believe there's a conversation coming up regarding additional metadata within broadcast content, which should enable accessibility features to realize better functionality in future.
One of the things you were talking about in that panel discussion that I found particularly thought-provoking, Sony, you are one of the largest manufacturers of camera sensors in the world. And one of the ideas that you were floating, and obviously this is not a, you know, an announcement or a policy or anything like that, but just purely in the context of a discussion around AI, is could we be using AI at the stage of actually shooting or filming the content and generating some of that metadata earlier in the production process?
I think that's correct. Already I mentioned the Atrius solution that Sony's partnering with Raspberry Pi Limited. An Atrius doesn't transmit the whole of the data image, it only transmits a portion. So data from the edge, very low power transmission, it's won a number of awards. And this is obviously, it's trying to demonstrate that AI doesn't have to be power hungry, but you do need to be selective in terms of the data you're transmitting, and then you need to understand the purpose. You know, so it needs research into which data you transmit from the image. But again, I think the way we somehow left the panel session was there could be a need for some type of working group or study to try to work out if metadata is added into images, how would we go about that? What type of data should be captured, etc., etc. So it's a, you know, it's a thought-provoking session this morning. We don't have the solution, but I think we use the word collaboration frequently. And I think in terms of trying to make a society change in a significant step, that sort of collaboration, I think, is key to consider.
David Williams from Sony Europe, thanks for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you, David Williams.
Hello, what's your name?
Hi, I'm Robin Sloan, and I lecture in game design and culture at Abertay University.
So, gaming recently, especially in the last few years, has picked up with accessibility. What's your opinion on the current state of accessibility in the gaming industry?
I think what we've seen is great strides forward in inclusion of a wider range of players, and especially accessibility features that are supporting those players who are blind or experience sight loss to participate more fully in games. I think we particularly see that in the big, high production value games, who've invested quite heavily in improving their accessibility. But I think we still have some way to go. There's still quite a lot of fragmentation. There's still lots of issues of access, but hopefully we're heading in the right direction.
You've done gaming yourself, I imagine. Which particular systems do you find most accessible for gaming that maybe haven't been so accessible a few years ago?
I think what you'll find is that a lot of games, I think if you're looking back over even the last 20 years, games have increasingly become more complex in the systems that are involved, but also the worlds that you explore are three-dimensional, there's verticality, there's been a very high need for games over the last 20 years to be able to understand and process visual information, very complex visual information, which I think has excluded a large number of people. I think what we've found in recent years, which has helped, is exploring three-dimensional, complex, very large worlds using audio navigation has been one of the most revolutionary systems for me. That's using audio cues to help orient you in the right direction, help you find objects in the scene, help you find where the edge of a cliff might be so you don't fall, or find where a collectible item might be by using sonar. I think these systems have largely helped, primarily because so many games use or make use of quite expansive, quite complex 3D worlds where visual cues have been the kind of standard convention for helping people for as long as there have been games. So I think that's the thing I would point to, and hopefully that will continue to improve.
How important would you say it is to involve blind and partially sighted gamers, especially for gaming developers, to involve blind and partially sighted gamers in game development and testing?
I think that's absolutely essential. I think that is happening more and more. I'm still not necessarily happy with how well done it is. I think, and I alluded to this earlier today in my talk, I think blind and gamers with sight loss need to be much more fully integrated into the game development pipeline and not seen perhaps as simply focus groups or consultants, but actually being integrated almost by default as a kind of professional role. Within games, we have programmers, designers, producers, artists, animators. I think we should be heading towards a standardized new role, which is accessibility and inclusion experts who are part of the teams, who are compensated and salaried the same as any other member of that team. And maybe they're freelance, or maybe they're integrated within an entire studio. I think you generally see blind and partially sighted gamers being brought on as consultants, more so for the bigger studios. I think a lot of small companies struggle because they struggle with finances generally. But as a game educator and someone who's going to be involved in training, at least part of my job is involved in training the workforce of the future, it's certainly something I'm an advocate for, of thinking about what are these new jobs, what are these new roles, how do we bring people with a variety of intersectional disabilities, not just in to kind of like harvest their knowledge and then move on, but actually bring them in as professionals, compensate them, pay them, make them part of a design team. That'd be my vision.
Looking at future developments in the world of gaming, is there something currently developing, a trend in accessible gaming that you're looking forward to seeing flourish in the nearby future?
I think, and this is a, I wouldn't say sort of that accessibility is a siloed thing. I think all forms of accessibility benefit everyone. But I'm particularly excited more about new ways of using controllers and input devices, new hardware revolutions that are allowing more people to play. So for instance, the kind of modern game controller has many, many, many buttons and many inputs. It's hugely complex. I think a lot of people in gaming don't realize how far it's come because it's become conventional and normalized. But you compare a game controller today to one from the 1980s, which had two buttons or three buttons, it is a very complex piece of kit. But now I think you see with things like Microsoft's adaptive controller, the capacity to customize ways that players can control, if they don't have use of their hands or don't have use of one hand, that they can control games in different ways. But also things like haptic feedback that allow people to feel around games, game worlds, know when they're in the right place, know when they're pointing at the right thing, to not have to rely on the traditional. I mean, I talk about this a lot with my students. We call computer games video games a lot as well, which kind of implies that it's a medium that is playful and visual. And I think that has maybe become a bit too conventionalized. Why are games so reliant on visuals? People need to get input through different ways and output in other ways. So haptic feedback through controllers, I think, brings huge benefits to a wide variety of gamers also.
So based on current developments in the gaming industry, how hopeful can people be of a more accessible future in gaming?
I think it's a time to be quite hopeful. I think there's lots of infrastructure issues, as there is with all these things. There's fragmentation in terms of one console maker and another console maker, or one mobile marketplace and another mobile marketplaces are not necessarily very well integrated. But I'm quite hopeful that we'll see, for instance, advances in screen reader technology being better integrated into games, and that being seen as a normal part of game development, and that will bring benefits to gamers who rely on screen readers. And hopefully not just on, say, their own mobile phone, but to be able to transport their settings from phone to console to computer and not having to have any kind of worry about that working first time out of the box.
Based on what you've seen from the manufacturers of gaming consoles, your Microsoft, your Sony for the PlayStation, how hopeful are you of gaming consoles themselves being more accessible?
I think, personally, from my point of view, I see Microsoft and Sony as for some time, some of the standard bearers of accessibility, along with Apple and Google in the mobile marketplace and the OS marketplace also. So I think, there's been huge advances in graphical power, computational power in consoles, almost as if people expect every new console generation has some radical new invention in terms of how it can project higher realism or what have you. I think we're at a stage where we've kind of peaked a lot in terms of the fidelity of what the games consoles can do. They can do very advanced graphics on a par with film. The next step for me is more advancements in consoles in terms of access. And I think you see things like that, like I said, the Microsoft Adaptive Controller being that, or the PlayStation 5 controller having more sense options, or indeed both Microsoft and Sony working to make sure that their games are accessible, the accessibility features can be ported. I think we'll see consoles as we go forward, and handsets for mobile phones as well, which I think are slightly ahead in terms of accessibility compared to consoles. I'll see the accessibility as being kind of the main, the main area of evolution and innovation, more so than to say in the past where it was always about better graphics or better audio, whatever it may be. I think that's what we're going to see.
Fantastic. Robin, thank you very much for talking gaming with us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
And that's it. That's all we've got time for this week on Tech Talk from the Inclusive Design for Sustainability Conference. We'll be bringing you more coverage on next week's show. We're always keen to hear from you here at RNIB Connect Radio on Tech Talk. Why not drop us a line, get in touch with the programme? We'd love to hear what you think about the Inclusive Design for Sustainability Conference. You can email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. From myself, Dave Williams, and the rest of the Tech Talk team in Glasgow, bye for now.